Yeah, thanks very much. So today I'm going to share a little small insights from my group that we have developed in the last couple of years with you. So it's a quantum excitation of hidden order and the thermal transport of hidden particles. And before I started, I want to advertise this conference next year. So this is the 10th International Conference of High Fractional Magnetism. And this international conference is held every two years. So the 10th one will be in Shanghai 2020 from May 17th to the 22nd. So the half of the organization committee actually are in this conference. So please pay attention to this conference. Yeah. So this is our outline. So first part of the talk will be explaining, try to motivate or try to understand this hidden order or intertriangular multipolar orders, and then associate the quantum excitations in this triangle that is magnets. So this is experiment, the theory grew perfectly well. Second part is about thermal transport, thermal Hall conductance in basically spinons or monopoles in quantum spinifuids. And this is mostly with my student, Yong Hao Gao, who is also here. So hidden order is a popular culture, popular word in Western culture. So this hidden order in brain, and actually a couple of days ago, a student, undergrad student, sent me her course history, let me to review. So I realized there is a hidden order in daily life. So Hong Kong is pretty Western, so this there is a course named after hidden order. If you Google, you can find a lot of books, hidden order in art, hidden order in corruption. There are many other hidden orders. So what's hidden order in condensed matter? So this word, this concept was introduced in condensed matter about 30 years ago due to this discovery of this material, uranium, ruthenium, silicon. So this material, if you apply pressure and cool the temperature, so this material has both alternating electron and a local moment. So uranium provided the local moment. So it's five F electrons. So if you cool the temperature around 17 Kelvin, apparently there is a phase transition. So this experience in heat capacity, there is a peak. And if you do entropy measurement, entropy estimation, there's a huge entropy drop at this 17 Kelvin transition. And below this temperature, the system enters some kind of order, which is unclear from any kind of experimental proof. And a very, very low temperature, there is a similar activity going on here. So this is called a hidden order. And the nature of hidden order was not understood. Yeah, so this is second order transition at 70 Kelvin, need a huge entropy drop. And this order parameter associated with this hidden order is not enough after three decades. This material has a lot of degree of freedom, local moments, conduct electron. So this is, and lots of measurement can be carried out because of this material has many kinds of degrees of freedom. So you can implement many kind of experiment, optically, scattering, neutron scattering, X-ray, or transport, or oscillation, all kinds of measurement. So there are also, in addition, a lot of theoretical proposals. This is a list of them summarized in this great paper in 2013. So that was 5 years ago. There are still new proposals. So these are many different orders being proposed. These are different multipolar orders and different. So the nature of this hidden order in this material has not been resolved yet. So how do we since this material, many other systems have been. This word, hidden order, has been used in other systems. So how do we identify the nature of this hidden order? So there is a simple proposal. We have this called, it's rather simple, it's called orthogonal operator approach. So imagine, this hidden order means you cannot, this order parameter associated with this order does not directly, couple to your experimental probe. So that's why it's invisible. You cannot. It's almost the dark matter of the condensed matter. You cannot really resolve it. Cannot really detect it with your current experimental probe. But the idea is that if you can find a physical observable, that can be easy observed experimentally. And this physical observable, you know, whose operator, you know, is orthogonal or do not commute with the proposed hidden order operator. You know, you find an orthogonal operator, orthogonal to this hidden order operator. And these as I said, is easy to observe experimentally. So the dynamic correlation function of these orthogonal operator will necessarily reveal the structure and underlying nature of the hidden order. So you can just find these things observable that are orthogonal to these hidden orders. So this idea has been summarized in these two works by us. Yeah, so let me use this idea to apply to this experiment, this material. So this material is not our motivation, it's an application of the idea. So this work has been mostly collaborating with my postdoc. He's a theoretical hero underlying this collaboration. And these are two experimental colleagues from Fudan University doing neutron scattering measurements. So this work has been accepted in Nature Communication, will appear there. So this is actually a motor insulator. This material is an insulating material. And this guy, you know, which is not often a magnetic ion, it's not being often studied. It's called tellurium. 3+, it got 12 electrons, 12 F electrons. So you form a local moment and form a triangle that is. So it's a triangle that is a magnet. So if you do this, conventional measurement, susceptibility measurement, by applying field along normal to the triangular plane, you see a large response. But if you apply field in the AB plane, in the triangular plane, so there is no response. So likewise, if you do magnetization measurement, so if you apply field normal to the c direction, parallel to the c direction or normal to the plane, you see a large magnetic moment. If you apply field in plane, that's nothing. Right? That's nothing. So heat and capacity measurement, see there is around 1 Kelvin, there is a peak. There seems to be a transition there. So you know, just from these susceptibility magnetization measurement, one can immediately conclude that this AB plane moment is not visible. It's hidden, right? Or it's just not there. Maybe it's an icing moment. It looks like it. Maybe it's icing, you know. So originally, these people, his group, Gedden was a group, he concluded that this is maybe icing spin. So then it's completely trivial if it is icing or triangle. That is, we know the result in 1949. So the transverse component or in-plane component is completely hidden. So only the c direction is visible in magnetic fields. So that's the thermodynamic measurement. So this is the neutron scattering measurement. So in the elastic measurement, there is a Bragg peak at the K point, at the momentum K in the branch zone, and this is the intensity. Around the 1 Kelvin, intensity become large. So the transition temperature is around the 1 Kelvin, which is consistent with the heat capacity measurement. And this is the, you know, yeah, in the case, in the momentum space, there is a peak at K point. And if you measure the intensity, measure this peak along C direction, you know, momentum along C direction is flat. So it's concluded it's a two-dimensional material. So it's a truly two-dimensional triangle lattice material. So the system orders antiferromagnetically at momentum K. So K is basically the momentum corresponding to what we usually study triangle lattice magnet, which is this 120 degree order wave vector. Well, it doesn't mean this is 120 degree order, just the wave vector is identical to the state of this 120 degree state.
So you mean it's a three sublattice order?
Yeah, it's a three sublattice order. This one can conclude. Yeah. So this is still the Bragg peak, and this is the experiment. The upper panel is the experiment. The lower panel is theory. So the upper panel is the experiment. So you fix this is the momentum, one direction and the other direction of the two-dimensional momentum, and you change the energy, from 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, 0.5, 0.9. So basically, if there is some energy band, you change the energy gradually. You see the cut, right? So this means there is a well-defined spin wave-like dispersion, right? Which cannot be, that means the system cannot be ice in degrees of freedom. If it is ice in degrees of freedom, which orders anywhere magnetically, so the dispersion will be completely flat. Ice spin does not have quantum mechanics, so there's no dispersion at all, right? Yeah. It cannot be. So the other conclusion it's not very clear is that the other conclusion is not obvious is that there must be some transverse component being ordered. So if the transverse component do not order, so this thing would be a two magnetic continuum. That requires some experience, but that will be too. You have a question?
Yeah, what does it look like in the usual K versus E versus K?
Yeah, this is this. Yeah, so this is energy one momenta. So really should be a two to three dimensional plot, right?
This is now experiment, right?
So the up panel is experiment. The lower panel is theory, which I will explain. Yeah. So the one conclusion one matter is one can make is this certain cannot be icing. If it is icing, it's going to be completely flat. So the other conclusion is that there must be some transverse component in AB plane component being ordered, which is hidden in any magnetic measurement. In our magnetization measurement, we don't see any AB component of the spin of the moment. So but in this dynamic measurement, that immediately indicates there is a hidden component, which is AB plane order, must be ordered. If it is not, this will be a two magnetic continuum.
Say it again, sorry. Why it's not ordered in the plane, according to you? Why it's not just 120 degree in the plane?
Yeah, so the K point order is a measurement of the C component of spin. So this neutron diffraction measurement. So this measurement is really measuring the C direction. So the neutron spin coupled to the magnetic moment in the same way as we apply field to the magnetic moment. So only C component of spin is visible by neutrons. So that means you can only measure the structure of the spin in the C direction, right? So AB plane, if it is order, it's not visible. If it doesn't order, it's not visible either. Right? So that AB plane moment, the magnetic moment in the AB plane is invisible. Right? So we apply field in the AB plane, there's nothing there. So AB plane order is invisible. Right? So that's the message I want to deliver.
No, this is a uniform field.
It's a uniform field.
So you cannot exclude that you have...
Well, if you apply field, you always get polarization, regardless whether it's anti-ferromagnetic order or ferromagnetic order, right? So you don't see any response. Right? So that means the AB plane in a moment as if it disappeared. Right? It really is not disappeared, it's there, just that we do not see it. I'm delivering the message of hidden order, right? It's hidden. Right? So this is hidden. So it's not, but from this experiment, if you think a little bit further, it's not really hidden, right? If it is truly icing moment, if there is no AB plane moment, so this dispersion will be completely flat, right? It will be flat. Just doing some calculation in your mind, it's going to be flat, right? So if this AB plane order does not exist, if there is no AB plane order, that's SX, SY, the expansion value of them is zero. If it is that, if it is instead of this kind, then this dispersion will be a two-magnetic continuum. It will be not a well-defined spin wave dispersion. It will be two-magnetic continuum. It will not be some coherent spin excitation. Right? Because if you write SZ equal to S minus A dagger A, if you compute the correlation function, that will be two-magnetic continuum. So the presence of a well-defined spin wave dispersion be measured here is a strong indication there is a hidden, there is a AB plane component which is invisible experimentally, but must develop some kind of order. So that's the conclusion. Must be non-zero. Otherwise, you cannot have a coherent spin constellation in this spectrum. So that's the dispersion in this this experiment, this theory, you know, along this cut of momentum lines. So this energy momentum. Yeah. So how do we understand that, right? So see, this looks like it's some kind of non-Kramers doublet, if we're familiar with that. So the eddy plane is the quadrupole moment. The z direction is dipole, and you don't see the quadrupole. It's wrong. This is actually they're not non-Kramers doublet. Not non-Kramers doublet doesn't mean it's a Kramers doublet. It's just not a non-Kramers doublet. Yeah. So the name is not very great, but this is a. So it's an even number electron per side. It's most likely form a non-Kramers doublet because it's an even number electron, so it's a non-Kramers ion. So this term is 3 plus even number electron 12, and if you do these Hans laws, so the total moment J equals 6. 6 is particularly special. It's an integer multiple of 3. Yeah. Turns out that the ground state wave function is a singlet. It's always a singlet. And there is second excited state, first excited state is also a singlet. So the wave function, you can write them down, which is a combination of 6 minus 6, Jz plus minus 6. There's some like a Jz equals 0, Jz plus minus 3. These are very small contributions. The system is almost Ising because the moment here. So the magnetic moment is almost, if you apply C field direction and large enough, you get almost polarized. This is almost equal to Jz equal to 6. So it's almost Ising, but it's not Ising. There is always a splitting between them. So if it is only this state being contributing to the magnetism, you don't see any magnetism. Singlet doesn't play any role in the magnetism. So it's these two states. The first ground state and first excited state. These are well separated from other excited states. Only these two guys are contributing to the low temperature magnetic property. Then you can build up effective spin 1/2 operating on these two singlets. So the reason it is singlet is because this is 6. So if you apply 3-fold rotation to that, it doesn't. It stay invariant. So this 2 pi over 3 rotation, right? So times multiple 6 is equal to 4 pi. Right? E to 4 pi is 1. So these two states that stay invariant. It's a magic. So these are two singlets on the any kind of 2-fold or 3-fold rotation of the D3D Poynting group. So they are truly singlets.
How big is the energy?
Yeah, it come next.
For so, other high.
Oh, this is very high. This is a couple hundred Kelvin. You can forget about it. Yeah, these two states are very close in energy because the form of the wave function are very similar. So that's why they're close in energy, right?
So close.
Yeah, lowest two states.
Yeah, when you say close, which is the order of magnitude?
You mean this energy?
Yes.
Or?
Yes.
This is.
0.6
million. Yeah, this energy scale. Yeah, so you can model this. You know, basically the wave function are pretty close, and the separation between them are actually pretty large. The distance between 6 and minus 6 is 12. Or then it may be 0, but the 6 between 0 is 6. So you would require flipping like 6 or 3 times, which is high order process. So then you don't have any transverse spin interaction. Then all the Ising, dipolar interaction between them, first neighbor, second neighbor, and then there is a transverse field here. So this is because there is an intrinsic splitting between these two states. Then you introduce the on-side transverse field to describe the splitting between these two states. So then it's become an intrinsic quantum Ising model. So it's an intrinsic one because the transverse field has an intrinsic origin. It's not like I apply a transverse field externally. So this is very different from extrinsic quantum isomer that has been pursued by, for instance, Songbin a long time ago on this carbon ionic. So this is a paragraph in a paper I wrote and published. So these are copper niobenide and barium copper vanadate. So strontium copper vanadate. These are just a copper 2 plus. So these are, so it's an emergent ion spin, but then if you apply transverse field, it generates an extrinsic quantum ion model. So the transverse field are generated by hand. So in contrast, this quantum ion model, the transverse field are generated intrinsically. So this
can be determined, the J2 and J1, J2 is parameter.
Oh, you can fit experimentally.
So J2 is almost negligible.
Yeah, J2 is very small. J2 is very small.
It's an F electron, right?
So it's F, it has to be very small.
It has to be very small.
Yeah, yeah.
So H is crystal field split.
Yeah.
Like J1, J2, you get from
spinner
distortion, or how did it?
Yeah, you can determine from Curie-Weiss temperature plus these fitting of the spectrum.
So if you add an external in-plane field in this effective model, what does it look like?
No, if you apply field only along Z direction, you cannot apply because from the magnetization measurement, you know, X, Y component do not respond to the external field. These are high order multiple moment, 2 to the 6th or 2 to the 3rd multiple orders. Yeah. So.
Sorry, but if we were to apply, so if we look at your equation and the way you have written that, I could substitute your last term is like, you could also put it as an external. So this you say it's from the crystal field, but you could also have an external field coupled to SIY, and then you would get the same response. So why do you say it's not coupling?
No, so if we apply field externally, the field only coupled to Z component. So X.
So you say that you need this intrinsic term to have the Y component coming in.
Yeah, this thing is a time also. Time was even, and this thing is time was odd.
Okay.
So because the time was even, it does not couple to the external field. Yeah. No, I define SY this way, SZ this way, because the wave function is not that diagonal in the SZ basis. It's a hybridization of 6 and minus 6. So then, you know, this three sublattice order being measured experimentally. It's a three sublattice SZ order, should be more precisely, SZ order. It's actually a quantum effect. It's arising from the geometrical frustration and quantum order by disorder. This is even known long time ago by Sonny Mostyn's numerical work. So this, if you just consider transverse field ion model, you know, in a weak field regime, this thing, you know, can be mapped into a quantum dynamic model and do a honeycomb analysis. There is a three sublattice order. It's an order by disorder effect. And then you map back this quantum dynamic model order into this spin configuration. It's this thing. It's not written well. The original paper is not parameterized this way. It's like it's up down, up down, up down, up down. This spin is pointing the transverse direction in a weak field regime. So if you increase the field, the three sublattice structure survives, but there will be a strong tilting to the implant direction. So this is basically the configuration draw here. So this is the spin configuration of this ground state.
That's actually a pseudo-spin configuration?
A pseudo-spin configuration,
is
yeah.
Z component?
Only a Z component is measurable,
right.
And the implant component is hidden, right?
Can I just check I'm understanding? What I think you've done is to take a non-Kramer's singlet ground state, describe this by a pseudo-spin for a non-Kramer's doublet, and then introduce this field to achieve the splitting,
yes.
Which you're saying is acting like a transverse field. It's going to give you a dynamics.
Exactly. Is that right? Exactly. Yeah. It's a quantum model. And
So these three sublattices, the order is preferred by that J1, J2 that you are considering?
No, order with J1, J2, it's, there's no order. It's basically primarily J1. That's
it's
always degenerate, right? So you need a transverse field to generate the quantum effect that select this particular three sublattice order. Without the transverse field, you don't have any order.
In the presence of this transverse field and J1, J2, this is the
favorite.
Well, if you have no transverse field, but if you have J1, J2, you have another type of order.
Yeah, if J2, here J2 is can be ignored, then just J1 is highly degenerate state. J2 just introduced for making the fitting a little bit better of intensity. It's not really, you can kill J2.
No, I was just referring to your statement. If there is no transverse field, an infinitesimal J2 orders.
Yeah, you can get some kind of strange order of some type.
It's well documented.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so. So now I'm expanding the question,
I know that the Z actually is like a high spin component, so slipping it with the magnetic D would be in plane is far, but with the splitting, what is the lowest order of the in plane D would contribute to this as well?
What does it mean? I don't understand.
Oh, I'm just saying I do perturbation theory, like at what order does the in plane field comes in?
Oh, this is, it depends on, it maybe like third order, maybe even higher than that.
Sure.
Yeah, so the denominator will be the energy scale of the energy separation between the lowest two doublets, two singlets, and the highly excited states. The energy gap will be that. The denominator will be that.
So the transverse field does not help that much.
If you apply magnetic field, at dominant energy will, dominant effect will be coupled to this component SZ.
Sure.
Will be coupled to SZ. Yeah. Yeah. Some my student, my postdoc, they are actually doing a numerics, including effect of external field along SZ direction. They have some first diagram. So the transverse components are hidden. I was advocating about hidden orders, and it should be non-zero according to, otherwise you don't see any dynamics, right? So now come to this dynamic measurement or this orthogonal operator approach. So SZ is orthogonal to the transverse spin component SX and SY. So the dynamics of that can be easily detected by neutron scattering. And actually all the SZ can be measured by neutron scattering. So if you're doing regular neutron scattering as if you are doing polarized neutrons, you're doing SZ correlation function, and if you do the calculation, you will get the basically this result, and this result, yeah. So this is a application of this orthogonal operator approach to understand the intertwined multipolar structure and the quantum excitation in this material. So this is a simple application of that. This orthogonal operator is SZ. Transverse components are hidden. So let me summarize the first part. So the interplay between geometrical fluctuation and the multipolar local moment, this is a separate summary from hidden orders, can lead to some rich physics and excitation. So the manifestation of this hidden multipolar order is rather than trivial. You need to combine both static and dynamic measurements together to conclude a unified story. So the orthogonal operator approach is quite general, actually. It can be used to reveal the dynamics of hidden order. And this can be adapted into many other hidden orders. For instance, if you one is interested, you can apply this idea to this 30-year-old puzzle of uranium ruthenium silicon. Just find out this orthogonal operator. Actually, over there, because of there are so many degrees of freedom, there are actually a lot of orthogonal operators. You just check all these different orthogonal operators, whether they can give you a unified description of the system. So finally, which is not mentioned, that there can be a non-trivial Barry Fess effect between this hidden component and the visible component. And they can give you some extra physics on the dynamical property of the system. it seems this thought has been hinted in some work by Kiefersen and Ian Fisher. They had this work on, it's actually the same iron, tellurium silver and tellurium gold compound.
Like SY of your pseudo spin, maybe they can also couple to magnetic field an even power or something? Is the time was even?
Yeah, it's if you apply very large field,
power.
Very, very large field with a small coefficient.
You know how, what will be the lowest power?
No, I didn't work on that. Maybe 6 power.
6?
Maybe 6.
Why 6?
Yeah, maybe 6. It's not a quadruple moment. It's like a 2 to 6 something. I don't know the name. 2 to 6 or the multiple like, moment.
It's like angular momentum 6.
Yeah.
Angular momentum 6.
Yeah. It's angular momentum 6. Yeah, it's the 2 to 6 order multiple degrees of freedom. Something like that. There would be some good English for describing this.
Some Latin.
Heck is a good thing. The polar, I don't know. Yeah. I'm doing well with the time. If there's no question, let me just continue to the second part.
Just one, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Question, but when you say non trivial Barry thing, just for example, then you have, suppose take Neil and BBS states, which don't come in. So then if you do imaging in the defects of Neil, you find BBS and vice versa. Is that what you meant, sort of, broadly speaking?
Yeah, I'm a bit vague on this. I'm just very vague. If you do, yeah.
But I think that's an example.
That's an example, yeah. That's an example.
And that's about non-compliance.
Yeah, so in this work, it's about this alloy, TMAAU2 and TMAG2. So TM provides this some kind of moment I was talking about, but hybridized with conducting electron. So then there can be some effect, which is not it's hinted there. It's not obvious whether it leads to anything significant in that context. Yeah, we can discuss about this later. Yeah, if there's no question, let me continue to the second part. I've been spending 1 year to develop this topic. So I try to understand. Our group try to understand this some Hall effects in quantum spin liquids, mostly by my grad student Yonghao Gao and Xiaotian is also here. Where is Xiaotian? Yeah, Xiaotian is here. So he did extensively on this particle U1 spin liquid. It's a monopole thermal Hall effect. So, yeah, so this is, maybe it's a motivation. So this is a very famous measurement of thermal Hall, half-quantized or quantized thermal Hall effects in lithium trichloride. When you apply, everyone knows this experiment, right? If you apply field, there is a, seems to be a, about 7 Tesla. Actually, the measurement is from 4 to 5. 45 Tesla regime, there is a, cover X, Y over T, then it's a plateau that looks half quantized. Yeah. So we can raise a lot of questions about this measurement. Also raise a lot of questions about generically on these honeycomb ketamine materials, both at H equal to 0 and H non-defined field and 0 field, you can raise a lot of questions. I'm not going to raise many questions here. It's actually easier to be destructive than to be constructive, so I'm not going to be destructive. So let me just, this is a very interesting measurement. I'll try to, part of the thought is original from there. So I'm also very motivated from this experiment by Hiroyuki Zenji and Yamashita from Japan. So this is on, this is a wobble-sized material. It's actually the first Kagami spin 1/2 material. It's before Herbie-Smith site. Although it's not a perfect Kagami, it's distorted Kagami, but it's the first spin 1/2 Kagami, single crystals. And this is magnetization measurement, there's some plateau going on.
Which one?
Wolbachite? This is Wolbachite.
Ah, yes.
This is Wolbachite. And this is the thermal Hall conductance measurement of Wolbachite and the capella site. They show this very large thermal Hall effect, you know. non-monotonic, apparently have different sign. At variable temperature, because what was I at like a sub Kelvin, sub 1 Kelvin, develop some order, some weak order, there's some ordering going on. You don't worry about this data over here. But the sign of these two materials are different, and they are not. So the question is why there is a finite non-zero homomorphic in this in the motor insulator, a strong motor insulator. Why is non-monotonic? Why these materials have different sign? They're all Kagami materials. Why have different sign of these? Yeah. So that's a question. Large homomorphic in spin one-half Kagami magnets. So this is my trivial understanding of the thermal effect. So thermal transport in motor insulator, in terms of energy scale, this temperature. So when the temperature is huge, that's a trivial regime. It's a trivial paramag. It's doing high temperature theory expansion. No, this is not very interesting. So this intermediate energy regime is where no one understands is the transport of on particle. There's no good understanding. It's not a ground state. It's not the infinite temperature paramagnet, there is some other intermediate where correlation just developed. You know, it's the intermediate temperature energy scale. It's not well understood either. Not well understood. So what we can understand is this low temperature regime, where the system is proximate to the ground state, and then can be a quasi-particle description, or various quasi-particle description, depends on the ground state. So the quasi-particle description one is this when the system orders, you know, when the system orders, so little bit of temperature, you create magnetons, and these magnetons can contribute to your thermal Hall effect. So this is some work, Y magnetron with Young-Beck and Dion balance, where this Y magnetron at finite temperature can contribute the thermal Hall effect. So this is like a non-trivial barrier phase, non-trivial barrier curvature of these magnetron bands due to this presence of Y points. Yeah, this is so magnetron thermal Hall effect is being well understood because there is a well defined quasi particle. We know the description very, 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 very well. And this is a particle form magnet. The vanadium is a magnetic ion. It forms ferromagnet. Magnet. Actually, not perfectly apparent because DM interaction is a distorted ferromagnet. Magnet. And the theory description agree with the experiment very well. Yeah, so the dots are experiment, the curve are theory. And this is a Kagami ferromagnet. Also because of DM, there's a natural, you know, magnetron barrier curvature distribution of the band, you can see this natural magnetron thermal Hall effect. So these are simple and well understood. So low temperature regime two, where the ground state is disordered the state, you know, where you that's a very beautiful idea by Philip Anderson, proposal of quantum spin grid. Yeah, so I don't need to mention the history. So I just imagined that in the 1970s and 80s, so you know, lattice gauge theory were developing. So these Anderson proposed this idea in the 70s and 80s. It seems we need to use lattice gauge theory to describe quantum spin grids. And just imagine the different branch of theoretical physics can eventually emerge. And in the 70s and 80s, we don't see any connection between these two different theories. You know, now seem today they should, you know, converge. Yeah. So we need to use a so-called gauge theory to describe a quantum spin grid. So the there's some emergent gauge structure by fluctuating mean field theory. I would like to use Xiaogang's description. You know, you cut spin into halves, or into spin-ons, or into whatever. So glue them back by gauge theory. And this is the formal procedure of trying to establish lattice gauge theory by cutting spin into two fermions spin-ons, and then glue back by gauge theory by including the fluctuation of the mean field, which generates gauge fields. So I'm interested in the physical property of quantum spin liquid. What are the natural physical property can this lattice gauge theory understanding bring to us? So one immediate consequence if the lattice gauge theory is in a decompined phase, So then we have a spin quantum number fractionalization. And the immediate experiment consequence is this consequence of fractionalization. We would see a so-called continuum of excitations. So neutron comes, imagine doing a neutron scattering measurement in elastic ones. You flip a neutron spin, create an integer spin excitation. Because of fractionalization of spins, so this should be shared by two spinons. So the neutron loses its energy and momentum, and this energy and momentum have to be shared by two spinons. If you list the energy momentum conservations, there are more variables than equations. So that means there is a continuous solution of these energy momentum conservation laws. And this is an example of one spin liquid candidate material where I see a broad continuum of spectrum. So basically the shape of these, the structure of this continuum put a strong constraint on the possible candidate spin liquid ground state. So you can build a connection between the spectrum and the kind of spin liquid. Consequence two, another immediate consequence, because of fractionalization, fractionalization is an independent phenomenon, independent from other physical properties. If you impose symmetry on top of these fractionalizations, so you will get a symmetry fractionalization. So symmetry corresponds to some kind of quantum number, you get a quantum number fractionalization. So this is an example of translation symmetry fractionalization, where the spin on hopping on lattice will experience some pi flux. So then the translation symmetry of the spin on is being realized projectively. So it's a projective symmetry group of translation symmetry. So then the spectrum of the two spin on continuum will have some enhanced spectral weight, spectral intensity. So the periodicity will be, for instance, half of the Brillouin zone rather than the whole Brillouin zone. So it has enhanced the spectral periodicity, which is a very important phenomenon. So these are all consequences of this spin-on gauge coupling, when the gauge theory is in a deconfined phase. So these are consequences on the spin-on matter themselves, right? So this is a consequence due to the matter gauge coupling, and the lattice gauge theory is in a deconfined phase, and we look at the matter sector, right? So the important ingredient in the theory is that the matter has a gauge charge. So there is a matter gauge coupling, right? So deconfined fractionalization are consequences of matter gauge coupling in the deconfined phase. What would be the, somewhat more direct evidence of the matter gauge coupling itself, right? So we want to understand this particular coupling, right? Now in physics, everything will be examined experimentally, right? So this is what's the evidence of matter gauge coupling. When the matter, hop on the lattice, and experience a background gauge field. And this means the matter carry a gauge charge. Well, what would be the evidence of that? To motivate this question, let me just go to the context of electrons. Right? Electron carry electron charge, or electron carry a U1 gauge charge. There is a Coulomb-Lepoisson interaction between the electrons. By saying that, that means this is a consequence of electron-phonon coupling. Electron carry a U1 gauge charge coupled to a U1 gauge field, and this phonon mediate a Coulomb interaction between the two electrons. So the in condensed matter point of view, the signature of this matter gauge coupling, or the when the electron hoppers and experience U1 gauge phase is this quantum oscillation measurement in condensed matter physics. So if we apply field, the electron hopping on that, it will experience a flux and form Landau levels, and then you can get this quantum oscillation due to the population of Landau different Landau levels. You get these quantum oscillations. This is a strong indication that this is a signature of electron coupled to this background magnetic field. So people use this idea to understand the quantum spin liquid by Alexey Mokronich, where he first pointed out that there can be a large orbital magnetic field on the emergent fractionized spinons. So for a spinon forming surface state, for this organic material. So this organic material is a weak model insulator. The charge gap is not very large. So basically, it's proximal to a metal. In other words, the spinon emerged in this context is not far from an electron. It's almost an electron. So it's almost it's an electron in a short distance. In a long distance, it's a spinon. So the microscopically because of strong charge fluctuation, they generate ring change, force mean ring change. If you apply field, the field will insert in this ring change. They will generate flux, and the flux will enter this ring change. Then will indirectly impact on spinons. So the spinon will experience the orbital magnetic field through the ring change. You get all these quantum oscillations. So that's a very, very, very cool phenomenon. But in this context, the spinons are not far from electrons. So it's somewhat not too surprising, because the spinons are not far from an electron. So this is the idea. You use external magnetic field to control the emergent internal magnetic field. So the significance of this work is that. So then, because of that, you can generate some Hall effect. Because you apply by an external magnetic field, you can generate internal U1 gauge flux and twist the motion of the spinons, then generate some Hall effect. But this is not really surprising, because the spinon in this context is not far from an electron. It's almost an electron. So the physics over in this context is very proximate to a Fermi liquid metal. But this material we point out, we studied this Kagame material, Wobbleside, capital side. These are strong motor insulator. So the charge function, charge gap is huge. The dominant is getting the problem. So you don't worry about the charge fluctuations. So the degrees of freedom in this context are spin. They are not electron. The spinon emerged from this context has no resemblance of to a physical electron. So the excitation are spinon. Do not carry an external U1 gauge charge at all. And the coupling to the external magnetic field is only Zimmer coupling. It's unlike this weak magnetic field or weak motor insulator, where the coupling to the magnetic field can have this orbit coupling. So this is very different. So there's only Zeeman coupling. There's no orbit coupling. How can this magnetic field, with only Zeeman coupling, come and twist the motion of the fractionalized spinons, neutral spinons, and create the thermal Hall effect? So our purpose is to understand the physical property of quantum spin liquids. It's not trying uniquely conforming quantum spin liquids. So there are four different cases of thermal Hall effects, in this strong model insulator. So we summarize. So we list here. So some people may be familiar with some of them. So in color spin liquid, where there is edge state, you will always get a quantized Hall effect even without the magnetic field. So for gapless little quantum spin liquid, such as this collapse spin liquid without magnetic field, if we apply magnetic field, you can change the band structure topology of the spinons and create a chiral edge. That's the example. Color spin liquid is the example. So this is very much like one, but applied to quantum spin liquid gapped gauge sector. So if we fully gapped the Z2 quantum spin liquid, the fact of field just rigidly shift the spinon band. There's nothing significant going on in this context. So what we are interested in is this the fourth one, where the gauge circuit is continuous. The gauge circuit is continuous. So then external magnetic field comes in and modify the internal continuous gauge field, and then by indirectly twist the motion of the magnetic field and generate thermal Hall effect. So this is the fourth part that we are going to fourth point that we are going to illustrate, and. The one which understood by Motronich and Patrick is the one in this fourth point, where the external magnetic field comes in and generate an internal gauge flux for the fractionalized particle and twist the motion of these spinons. So, but in this context, as I mentioned, because of this weak, it's a weak model usually, the charge gap is very tiny. So the coupling to the magnetic field has this orbit coupling automatically, you know, already in the Hamiltonian level. So the spinor is not far from the electron. So the physics here is not far from a real Fermi liquid.
Sorry, the limit here spin gapless type of spin liquid, or how we call this kind of methodology. So if you want to have this spin on Fermi surface, don't you need also to be a gapless spin liquid system?
For this last point, we do not necessarily require the spin on sector to be gapless.
Okay.
So, but in 2D imaging, we have to have that, otherwise it will be confined. In 3D, you know, you can have a gapped matter sector. So, but the essential observation is that we need an external magnetic field to generate an internal gauge flux, which is not obvious from the coupling that there is only Zeeman coupling. It's not obvious how that Zeeman coupling comes and modify the internal gauge flux, internal U1 gauge flux. This is the hard part of this one. So the in the context of this weak model insert, it's almost clear because you know the at Hamiltonian level we already included the effect of the flux of the magnetic flux because of this ring exchange. This if you apply field, not only we have Zeeman coupling, we have this coupling to the external magnetic field in an orbital fashion. So this is basically very much like electrons. But in a strong model insert, there is only Zeeman coupling. It's not really obvious how does this Zeeman coupling, you know, come to modify internal gauge flux, right? So,
but magnetic field can couple to this scalar spin chirality, right?
Yeah, this is a very high order thing.
So H times S1 dot S2.
Yeah. Yeah, so
the only thing you need really is some linear coupling between magnetic field and curl wave.
Yeah.
So maybe since we are putting here as a strong modern insulator, I mean we are putting here like for instance a double Schmidt, like in the language of let's say there is this classification in terms of modern insulators and charge transfer insulators. So in this language, so what this paper a long way back by Savatsky, in this language, this Herbert Schmidt is in fact a charge transfer insulator because you have that the upper and the lower Herbert band are very far away, and what you have in between is in fact the P bands of the ligands.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more as a transfer insulator, and you have to deal with that when you do also these considerations because this is what you find in fact.
Yeah, this is a good point. Yeah,
charge transfer type of.
If you.
Which is not in the case of the organic materials.
Mm-hmm,
organic
mm-hmm.
materials, they are genuine mm-hmm. mod insulators. So you
mm-hmm,
have the
mm-hmm.
low and upper Herbert band, and this is what defines your gap.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think this is something that you call it weak and strong, but there is this other classification that would call mod insulator and then charge transfer insulator.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, one can further just modify this classification a little bit. Inclusive, you know, for the charge gap is huge. If charge gap is small, then you can include this charge transfer insert into that. Just regard all this, you know, this perturbation process. What's the denominator? Basically, it's the denominator of this perturbation theory to do this super exchange. Yeah, if the denominator of this thing is small, then it's regarded as weak. If this denominator is large, then it's geometric. Yeah. Return to the Young-Beck's point. So yeah, it's true. One can have this bisymmetry, but then, so what would be the mechanism to generate this term? We need to have a microscopic understanding how this magnetic field can generate, you know, this coupling to three spin product. So there is a distant observation, maybe like 3,000 miles away. But, it's a very distant observation by Patrick and Nagosa when they try to understand Herbert-Smith site. No, so they propose this U1 quantum spin liquid with Dirac cones, the Dirac U1 spin liquids. So because of the DM interaction, because of emergent symmetry, there is no emergent symmetry on the bond, and there is a DM allowed. So it's an anisometric DM interaction. So they observe if you measure, you try to measure spin correlation function. In neutron scattering measurement, there is always, it always measures pairwise spin correlation function, S-S correlation, right? So they try to measure the scalar spin chirality correlation function, which is SSS. So it's a six spin correlator instead of two spin correlator, right? So neutron scattering cannot really measure this six spin correlator. It's a high order, much high order process, right? So you cannot imagine this can be detectable in a regular neutron scattering measurement. So the observation that actually in a in a regular neutron scattering measurement, if you measure pairwise spin correlation function, there will be a proportionality term to the scalar spin chirality correlation function based on the observation of including of this DM interaction. So yeah, because of DM, so this thing is non-zero in the Hamiltonian level. This is non-zero. So there will be proportionality term between the expression value of the spin operator and the scalar spin chirality. So if you measure SS correlation function, there will be a piece corresponding to this correlation of the scalar spin chirality, right? So then you can this scalar spin chirality is the fluctuation is basically U1 gauge field correlator. So that tells you one can detect this scalar spin chirality fluctuation or the gauge field fluctuation using neutron scattering measurement, right? So this is the hint, right? Although this observation by Patrick and Nagosa is far away from the thermal Hall effect, but really tells you how to generate thermal Hall effect in a U1 quantum spin liquid in 2D. So the observation that if you have DM, like this, so if you apply field, the combination of DM, so this scalar spin chirality, it approximately equal to this dot this. If you have DM, this is non-zero. If you have DM, this is non-zero. The whole thing will be non-zero. And this thing, the scalar spin chirality is nothing but a U1 gauge flux defined on this by 1-2 spin, three spins. It will be an internal U1 gauge flux spanned by these three spins. So then you can generate the internal flux distribution by combining Zeeman coupling and the DM interaction. So this is the origin of this thermal Hall effect. So as the spin are moving on the lattice, on the lattice, you will experience this induced U1 gauge flux, induced by the combination of DM and the Zeeman coupling. So then the spin on bands will be modified, and it will generate a thermal Hall effect.
A question, but even if there were no spin on, this is still true, right? Even if there's some symmetry, if there was spin on, this would happen today. But if there was no spin on, even then from symmetry, you will get.
Yeah. So I was reminding you, I was trying to understand the physical property of quantum spinning. I'm not trying to uniquely conform in quantum spinning.
Right.
Yeah. So even if it is order steady, we'll have that too. Right? But order, we know it's order in the very beginning. We know it's order from other means. Right?
Maybe you see that.
Yeah, so you might generate a thermal Hall effect.
On this slide, is this orientation of these arrows correct on this cargo bay C? Which should they all point in the same direction?
Which one?
The one is minus flux and the other one is
positive. Yeah.
So they should be oriented the other way.
Right? No, it's not. It depends on how you define how you define this clockwise or anti-clockwise. Your product. So the thing is, this depends on the direction orientation of the induction, and because of that, the flux generated by this effect is not uniform. It's very different from this Motronic's idea, where you apply a magnetic field, the flux generated is uniform. So then you get if you look at the spin spectrum, there will be an enhanced the translation symmetry of the spinor will be realized projectively. Here it's not. So the cell, the unit cell, you know, if you include the flux, the magnetic unit cell is identical to the crystal cell. So there is no effect of that. Yeah, so this provides a way to control the emergent spinor matter, emergent degree freedom with the external probe. Yeah. So then you can do the calculation, you can find that there is a Gamow effect. The sign, as I said, these two materials, they have different signs of Gamow effect. The reason is because the DM interaction direction is different. That's what we suggest. They have different orientation of DM, so then the sign is opposite. Which is monotonic is sort of obvious. When the temperature is high, all the bands have been populated. So then the Berry field will cancel, then Berry culture will cancel, will be vanishing. So it's non monotonic. Yeah, so this is the Kagami system. And recently there are a lot of work, earlier by Frank Pullman and others. So they find in this Kitab material, if you have Hamiltonian, adding Zeeman coupling, there will be intermediate regime, there will be a Ewing quantum spin liquid when Kitab spin liquid is being destroyed. And this is, can be understood as, Kitab spin liquid can be understood as a pure pairing of Abel-Kirchhoff formula, if you write a spin in terms of Abel-Kirchhoff formula. And this is like a pair breaking transition. When the pair breaking transition happens, the system goes to a normal phase, and this normal phase is a Ewing quantum spin liquid. With spinor forming surface, so this state, if you include the DM interaction, which is allowed on Honeycomb lattice second level, if you include the second level DM interaction, then you can apply our proposal to understand thermal Hall effect in this regime. Yeah, so then you get a finite thermal Hall effect at zero temperature limit, at low temperature limit. I'm not trying to understand the experiment in this material, in this leucine trichloride. I'm just trying to advocate so this Ewing quantum spin has a large thermal Hall effect because of if we include the DM interaction here.
In any direction of the light magnetic field?
Mostly if you apply field.
So you have to do it in the perpendicular direction?
Yeah. Perpendicular direction. So this is for this two-dimensional U1 spin liquid, and you have this mechanism. So for three-dimensional U1 spin liquid, it's mostly by my postdoc, Xiaotian Zhang. Xiaotian is here. He's actually more handsome than and this reminds a Hollywood movie when there's opening, there's a line, right? It's a drawing line. So
this engine.
Yeah, yes. So the in this context, actually, we do not require DM interaction. The Zeeman coupling coupled to so-called Z component of the spin. This is because of this particular realization of this lattice gauge theory. So the Z component of spin in this particle U1 spin liquid is nothing but so-called emergent electric field. This is nothing but the emergent electric field. So in three plus one dimension, this thing is described by compact U1 lattice gauge theory, compact quantum electrodynamics. So there are emergent magnetic monopoles. Some people call it the dual monopoles. So the magnetic monopoles see this induced E field as a flux. Just the electrons see magnetic field as a flux. So the monopoles see this induced E field as a flux. So then, we apply external field that induce the internal. This will be non-zero. And this is induced the E field. So then, the magnetic monopole will see this E field as a flux. So then we generate a non-trivial thermal Hall effect due to this, due to the induced E field. So there will be a monopole thermal Hall effect, magnetic monopole thermal Hall effect. Right? So some experiment has been done a long time ago by Ong, it's a paper on science, 2012, I think. Yeah. So there's some other works, but using Schrödinger bosons, and I also consider scalar spin chirality, but did not interpret in a gauge field fashion, because it's a Z2 spin liquid here. Let me summarize the second part. So we point out that there is a physical origin of the emergent Lorentz force on the spinons and obtain the resulting we call it a topological thermohorphic because this spin chirality scattering thing is used to understand the topological Hall effect in this iterant magnet, where you have background skirmion where electron moves can experience the background flux generated by the skirmion, and this effect is called a topological Hall effect. And the physics here is quite similar, but it's a thermal Hall effect. So we call it a topological thermal Hall effect, just using the similarity of the mechanism. So we established the connection between the microscopic interaction and the emergent fractional degrees of freedom and provide a scheme to control these degrees of freedom. So this result can be extended to other non-central symmetric quantum spin liquid. This actually does not require to be non-central symmetric. As long as you have DM, you would most likely have this effect. So in the end, the thermal Hall effect, thermal transport in molten inside are not really well understood. Yeah, there are still a lot of opportunities. Thanks.
Stop questions, comments. Yes, Steve.
In these scenarios where you have DM interaction, can you comment on the orientation dependence of the thermal Hall effect, let's say for the orientation of the magnetic field?
Yeah, so well, I can give a small comment. So if you have a different different orientation of the field has two effects. Firstly, if this DM is this direction, then the projection of this field direction along this direction, the general flux. But field itself also split the spinon band. You have two effects. It's that these two effects together give you this angular dependence. Yeah.
But the plot you have for this edge, this is an edge which is taken perpendicular. So it's the 1-1-1 direction.
Yeah, this is the 1-1 direction.
So if you take any other field, because we know that this space, when you put D equal to zero, this space is there when you have this 1-1-1 direction. So how many different fields did you look at? Directions.
In the presence of DM, you mean?
In the presence of DM, yeah.
Just the 1-1-1 direction.
Just this one.
But I mean, I would say presumably stable for...
For quite a long...
Probably, yeah.
Because you only have the DM. Very good.
Concerning the first part,
yeah.
Can you remind me the phase diagram of this easing model in Clausius field at zero temperature?
It will always be three something. As long as you turn infinitesimal magnetic field, transverse field, it will generate this three something order. Yeah.
So, as a function of H, you have a phase transition?
No, so as a function of H, there will be phase transition. When field is very large, you get all the spin will be in the transverse direction, which is what we call a disordered phase, right?
The other side is
the other is this three subject order.
Which is gapless, according
to you. Well, the system doesn't have any symmetry at all. So there is no reason why it should be gapless.
No, but if you measure the dynamical structure factor, this is gapless eventually, correct?
No, eventually it should be gapped. But it can be a mini gap that cannot be visible in experiment. So the system doesn't have any symmetry at all. Why it should be gapless? It's a discrete symmetry. All the eyes in symmetry.
I was surprised, but according to your picture,
yeah,
it seemed gapless. In fact, it's gapped.
No, so it cannot be gapless. You're always gapped.
I mean, is the fact that it's apparently gapless related to the fact that the J1 and the H term are of similar magnitude?
No, it should be gap. What's the question? I don't understand the question.
I mean, let's say the gap appears to be small in the elastic neutron scattering.
Yeah.
From the plots. Is that related to the relative magnitudes of the interaction terms and the effective quantities?
No, I think it's because the system is highly frustrated. There is a lot of degeneracy if you turn off the transverse field. So even if you add the transverse field, there's still some remnants of this frustration. You can see some very small gapless acceleration going on. Yeah, the system doesn't have any continuous symmetry. There's no reason.
Yeah, but from the figure, it's a bit confused.
Why it's confused?
I was confused.
Can we discuss this later? But this a little bit of detail. Yeah.
From your thermal hall, if it were not a confinement, so the one thing when you do two situations where it is the actual spin on, the other case it's not, is there some way to estimate the confinement length scale from some, so that at least you can then you have some hope of getting whether it was actually because of spin on or it was just something because of confinement? Is there some length scale to extract from some
general? No, this is a difficult question.
Anyway.
I don't know.
So we can go
blind
not to get any questions.
Yeah, I think there can be some.
The theory is below.
Yeah, this can be some order. This order by disorder effect, you know, they can generate
yes.
this. Eventually, it should be gapped. It should be gapped. It's just
okay.
It's not discernible. Okay. You know, Lucia has this kind of order by disorder. They can have the pseudo gap, pseudo ghost mode. You know, the system doesn't have continuous symmetry, but you know, if you take care of these degenerate. You know, degenerate classical ground states, then looks there is a continuous symmetry, and then you break it by kernel fluctuations, it looks like the extension has some gapless mode, but really it's the gap. It's a mini gap. It's not discernible experimentally. They call it a pseudo ghost mode. Yeah, theoretically, yeah. Should be gapped. Yeah.
But sometimes, if you do linear spin wave theory,
yeah.
You can have a gapless mode. If by the time you add any anisotropy, it just
yeah.
So I have a question on thermal poles.
Mm-hmm.
So when these experiments came out, there is a nice work by Lucille Leon and also Achim Walsh and his postdoc where they showed that you need to include the phonons in your description. So are you also taking this into consideration when you're talking about thermal pole in general, for especially for this type of experiments or materials,
yeah, so
in degrees of freedom, so are you also taking that into account?
No, I'm not taking that into account. In the context of Lucia and Leon and Mengxin and Achim Loesch and others, so over there, the reason they consider phonon is because of this particular experimental setup by Yuji Matsuda. So I'm just considering more generally, you know, how do this quantum Hall effect can appear in a quantum spin liquid. Yeah.
Questions? Otherwise, it's time for lunch. Thank you very much.
Thank you.